Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, January the 22nd, 22nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from St. Bernard's, President Dave Sharp.
Hey, good afternoon.
This afternoon, we'll talk a little bit about some of the different classes that are offered and how are they arrived at. What classes are needed? What classes are required? What classes, is it because an instructor may have some interest, or staff, or parent involvement, things of that nature? How do you determine what classes are offered in a high school? And then we'll also spend a little bit of time at an elementary school level. Which are some of the classes, not classes, but areas of emphasis that are done in the classroom setting? So we'll kick around. How do you find out what is being taught, and how do you structure it when we come back?
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Sharp. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Bertrand Russell, sometime between 1872 and 1970, said, quote, "One of the symptoms of an approaching nervous breakdown is the belief that one's work is terribly important." Yeah, ain't that so, huh? Gee-many. When you first came on board a couple years ago at St. Bernard's and we're looking at the classes that were offered, how many of them were, at that time, classes that needed to be offered because of college, classes that needed to be offered because momentum, inertia, Bishop, perhaps accreditation. How did you sense what was there?
Mm-hmm. Most of the classes that we, at the time that I came on, and you know certainly now, were classes that were required for, you know, college acceptance, getting those credits that students needed to put together the right transcript to look good in front of a college. However, within that, there were a couple areas, one in particular that we looked at and we thought, you know what, we can get much better at this. And that was science. So in terms of catering to our customers, our client, you know, our students, in particular, our international students who had a very huge desire to take very strong science classes, we saw that as an area of growth. And so that meant putting in place the right teachers who could teach those classes. And as a result of that, we've hired a couple very strong science teachers and then introduced one class in particular that was a science elective, and that was marine biology. So that came about because we had students interested in that sort of class. We had a teacher that could teach it effectively, and we had openings in the schedule to allow our students to be able to take that sort of class.
So it wasn't because you had mud puddles in the back parking lot?
Not quite.
No. Okay, good.
the tide pools in the parking lot.
There is still a fair amount of discretion, though, with the types of classes that could be offered. History. Mm-hmm. Okay, certainly college prerequisite. Okay, American history, fair enough. California history, fair enough. World history, okay. However, how those classes are taught could wildly vary. Yeah, if I was teaching a California history, you probably wouldn't want me to do it. However, if I was teaching a California history, it would be focused on Humboldt, Del Norte, Mendocino, maybe the old Jefferson or the old Klamath County, mm-hmm. maybe including Reading, possibly, and maybe even Lassen and Shasta. Mm-hmm. That would be about it. Figuring that, okay, all of the missions throughout California have been talked about 14 times already. Didn't need to do that again. San Francisco history really isn't. Yeah, it would be a local history and California interaction, whether it was state transportation, budgets, political environment, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. How do you determine, or do you, at senior management level, content of classes versus what the teacher may actually be delivering in the classroom setting?
Well, I think you're right. I think California history is something, from missions to Native Americans, is something that's taught, you know, throughout your education. California and Humboldt history is a ninth grade history class that we offer our students. One area that we saw as needed some strong content in the class was geography. Just the ability to look at a map, to understand, the different elements of that. And it's much easier to understand oceans and mountains and grasslands when you understand where you live and how those things, well, look and interact, and especially you mentioned transportation and how that affects things. So we saw that as an area of growth. And also, too, we do take time out of our history class and our English class to really deliver some study skills that the freshmen need for that year and following years. So that's something, because we have that discretion, because we can be able to tailor the class to the needs of our students, to be able to introduce those study skills, especially in a history class, which is kind of lecture-based, you know, good note-taking, here's how you study for a test, here's how you keep your binder. Those sort of things can be interwoven into the class. When I got there, we had a separate study skills class that was, in and of itself, good content, but it wasn't integrated really as well as it could be with the actual classes, so that the students could use those tools in those classes. So by having that as part of a class, it's easier to interweave those elements.
As you consider some of the different choices that are available, Dave, do you get involved in the teacher in the classroom level? Do you look for a syllabus to find out where the areas of emphasis are? Or do you pretty much have the teachers teach in the direction that they do and you pop in?
We, at first, in the planning stages, want to make sure that the teacher has a good textbook that they can follow. And they'll have their area of emphasis, wherever that might be. And then we'll pop in, make sure that they're supported.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Nowadays it's cold outside, especially if you can't afford warm winter coats for your children. That's where Coats for the Cold comes in. This homegrown organization collects donated coats, cleans them, and distributes them to needy people. It began in 2008 when Robert Lone saw sharply reduced coat prices in a store, bought a batch, and donated them to the Eureka Rescue Mission. Beginning late in January, Coats for the Cold will give out over 1,000 coats in the county, now including southern communities. To donate a coat, new or lightly used, there are 50 Humboldt locations where you can drop it off this month. Find them on this website, coatsforthecold.org. That's coatsforthecold.org. Volunteers from Teen Challenge and other organizations will give out the coats to children. Your warm heart can keep them warm this winter. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Sharp. Dave, in the classroom, we talked a little bit in the last segment about history and geography, and geology would be part of those also. I would think that there would be a temptation. You've got two different audiences. You got the college audience, okay, mm-hmm. the admissions offices in the colleges, but you've also got the ACT, SAT audience, mm-hmm. if you will. The ACT, the one I have more preference towards that than the SAT, probably because I did better on it when I was in high school. The marine biology was part of it, certainly. History was part of it. Geography was part of it. History is part of it. Those don't tend to be, geography, for example, isn't a college prep. It's not even recognized. You can't really even fake that one. Mm-hmm. But yet it's a critical ingredient in the testing that the ACT has for kids that may be using that as their placement test. Do you try to integrate it? Do you have it as a standalone? Certainly as an elective, I don't think you got a lot of people jumping up and down with the opportunity to look at a gazetteer to be able to spin a globe and go, yeah, I'm in geography class. How do you wrestle that one to the ground?
Well, our one of our biggest findings with aligning our classes with the content and the expectation of those standardized tests are really the English component, and how 45 minutes a day in one English class really isn't enough time to master those skills. So to integrate English into especially history, science, of course, too, and support that with a basis in foreign language is a direction that we're going, so that we can make sure that those English and that critical reading is much better on our SAT and ACT tests. The math is another major component, and then making sure that we make sure that our students are properly aligned, you know, whatever track that they're looking, whether that's, you know, the AP track or maybe getting in or just getting towards graduation requirements. And there's different speeds at which to go that way. But really, the finding has been English. And in a world where, you know, our teenagers are doing a lot of texting and a lot of shorthand, it just, that sometimes translates onto an essay paper, if you can imagine. So to really reinforce those things that I know that they learned in elementary school, but to practice those more than in just the English classes, to practice those in history and anywhere else you get an opportunity to write. Because I don't think that in today's world we get as much of an opportunity to write and to read as perhaps we have in previous generations.
I would imagine that there are opportunities that abound as far as classroom and classroom structure. As an example, we talked about history and geography. You could put those together really easily into a classroom. I don't know what you'd call it. Mm-hmm. But as far as, well, let's say the Western expansion. Okay. Boy, we had some geography involved there, and we had a little bit of geology, and we had home economics, and a whole bunch of other things all wrapped around westward expansion. Mm-hmm. But you don't have a class called Westward Expansion, and you don't have one, you know, that most home econ classes aren't college prep classes. And yet you could wrap that together and it would really kind of bring everything together. Mm-hmm. Is that stuff that's more for the junior high and the elementary school level for that multidiscipline approach? Or is that something still that can be woven in to the high school experience, particularly with the backdrop of the international kids?
I think you're right in terms of that's really best interwoven in an elementary setting where you have the teacher that's really there from 8 to 3. And so that they can integrate different subjects into one and then plan their day that way. However, you know, when you have talented teachers that can bring their experiences into the classroom, that's going to make for a dynamic classroom. For instance, our AP world history class is taught by a young man that's been all over the world, speaks over 5 languages, and has that experience of being in different places and not just reading about history in a book, but experiencing history in different cultures within the context of their lifetime. So to be able to have that sort of knowledge level and impart that on students, I think you're going to get to those lessons where you're talking about, where you can integrate different things rather than just go along with what's in the textbook.
Passion is going to be critical to any classroom setting. Mm-hmm. How do you judge passion?
Well, that's a tough thing to do in a 20, 30, 40 minute interview when you have a teacher. But
okay, then how do you monitor passion in the classroom?
Well, I certainly think that you can get a sense of someone's passion in that interview setting and in subsequent recommendation letters and reference calls and that sort of thing. I think passion is best pushed with a good amount of support from administration, so that they feel that they can go after whatever it is that they think is most important. And if they're passionate about that and they're supported, the students are going to get both those, both that passion and that support, and then they're going to have a better experience in the classroom.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from Dave Sharp.
This is Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City Schools Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23 to 1. Eliminating our combination classes. And the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course and extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now through January 25th. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back talking shop this afternoon with David Sharp, president at St. Bernard's. Dave, as you look at trying to make the educational continuum from the, I guess, probably mid-elementary school level, you know, before that we're coloring, we're figuring out words, see Dick chase Jane or vice versa, and up and down with Spot or that kind of stuff. You can tell I haven't been there in a long time. But once you get, I guess, probably beyond about third grade or so, and opinions begin to form and experiences start to happen and the sharing, how do you make that so everything's on a string? You pull one end and everything kind of flows together all the way up through the senior level at the same time when you're going to be getting the transfers in at the junior high level and at the high school level. How do you do all that?
It really takes a team and a community to support that sort of endeavor, and especially one that is open to really new people and new experiences and new beginnings. So when you talk about the situation, and we have it quite often where new students arrive, whether it be at the beginning of school year, the middle of the school year, to have that sort of inviting feel to allow the momentum to go forward is both fostered among, you know, the school as a whole, but really within the teachers and the students too. We've had students that have gone from preschool all the way to their senior year and graduated. And then along the way, students have been scattered in there throughout their time. So you mix those two things together, and then you get new students that come along quickly because of that really community feel of the students and the teachers that want more students to be able to experience what it is that we're doing at St. Bernard's. So when you have teachers that really love what they do, they're passionate about it, they want to share that experience with others. And so, you know, sometimes that's one or two students at a time. Sometimes at the beginning of the year, that's a whole new class of students. So it really takes that community to build that and foster it.
Well, we were talking about history and world history. Is there an emphasis, are there modules, if you will, for some of the countries where your international kids come from, either that they may be teaching at the elementary school level one or two days during the year or at the junior high, or at least recognition as they're going through the process also?
Well, certainly at the very least recognition. And I think the main country they're talking about in terms of our international students is China. So, of course, our teachers understand that, and they want to give them some content and some modules and lessons that they can get really excited about. And that's certainly, you know, their home, their country, and to teach some of those lessons, but also for them to understand how those events in their country's histories are viewed through the eyes of, you know, the West and through America. So I think that could be a very eye-opening experience for them. I know it certainly was for me when I was in China reading their newspapers about the events that were happening in the U.S., I think that's something that we can certainly educate our young men and women to be able to understand, okay, what is the angle here? And how do I really, if I want to find a little more, where do I go to get that?
Well, I would think global trade, or international trade, I guess, is mm-hmm. probably the better way to say it, mm-hmm. is one of those. International mm-hmm. tourism certainly mm-hmm. is one. Obviously, you've got conflicts all over the place. You mm-hmm. play that out. Population. Environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there are allowances then made for them to be incorporated, or for perhaps a different focus mm-hmm. than what we sometimes will experience.
Certainly, and I think the global trade one, because we have quite a few students that, you know, let's face it, in order to send your child to America to study and to board, it costs quite a bit of money. And, you know, we're talking about families that are, you know, pretty well off, and these are people that are primarily factory owners. So they, within their families, have a pretty global view. And I say global, not American view, because they're trading with not just America. They're trading with Europe and Australia and these other countries throughout the world. So I think that brings a bit more perspective to our students, not to just be so focused on where we are, but how the rest of the world, interplays.
Yeah, I have a global focus. San Diego to Seattle.
I went skiing at Bachelor once, yeah.
Yeah. I would think that's a paradigm that's kind of halfway challenging to blow apart with some of these students and, I suppose, some of the early or younger age faculty, too, is to blow it up and really say, you know, geez, have you driven to the East Coast? Do you mm-hmm. know what that's like?
Mm-hmm.
How many miles? Mm-hmm. How many different regions? How many different cultures you'll go through between here mm-hmm. and there? And to really kind of grasp things or Canada, Mexico, you know, and some of those different things.
Mm-hmm.
Is that specifically addressed, or is that just something that comes out in discussions in the classroom settings?
It's really a product of what we are and what we've become over the last 10 years. And just we've become part of a global school with a global perspective. And that has been aided in large parts by our international population and those students that come from all over the globe, really. And it's certainly something that we discuss to make sure that our teachers are equipped to teach students from other parts of the globe and to understand, okay, where are they coming from? What are the issues there? And how can we best support them speaking and understanding English so that they can succeed much quicker?
Do you let them into the kitchen?
Do we let the students kids? And the kids?
Yeah, I would think that'd be an absolute, that would really be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you had, I don't know what you could do, but I would think a small school would have the ability to.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the senior class and everybody declares their ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
And they have one air. And they have to create a meal from their cultural identity.
Mm-hmm.
And just mm-hmm. see what it would be like. And then to talk about where do these things come from and how do they develop and what are the food products and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about that before. That would be something that could bring people together and really understand each other's differences and really how much we are actually alike. We had a Korean dinner that was very successful last year, and there was a great barbecue beef that I ate that I forget the name of, but it was amazing.
You're going back for more, aren't you?
Yeah, I already got my ticket for this year, so.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Dave Sharp.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Sharp. Dave, as you're planning for an upcoming event or an upcoming year or upcoming faculty hires with the backdrops of what we've talked about for the show,
mm-hmm.
are there any areas that you place higher emphasis on than others?
Well, there's two really general things that we look for. The first, and I wouldn't quite say foremost, but certainly the first thing to look for is, you know, ability and experience. Can you do the job? And then second, are you going to be a good fit? Because there's a certain culture at St. Bernard's that's very community-oriented, where you enjoy really everybody that you work with. You're going to cross department lines and you're going to make friends in other departments and other grades as a teacher. So are you the type of person that can get out there, not just kind of be in your own world, but really be a good fit within the organization? I think those two things are very important for us as we look at who are the right people to bring into the school. And those people can come from all different types of backgrounds, whether that's, you know, the public school setting or previous private school experience or a combination of both. If we can find within them, you know, the ability and the experience plus that fit, because, you know, it is a unique place at St. Bernard's. And if you have that passion and you want that close interaction with not just students, but parents too, then you're going to be somebody that's going to succeed.
What about real world? Is there any space for people with their foot on the ground rather than in the textbook?
In terms of new teachers to hire?
Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, I know there's a huge push to have everybody credentialed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. If I'm taking a business class, I want somebody who's been in business rather than somebody who's been theoretical,
mm-hmm.
but may or may not have ever had to take the calls at nighttime or deal with customer complaints straight up, full blast, here you go.
Sure, sure. That's certainly a challenge, but it's something to work towards, and especially as you look at, you know, electives and certain disciplines that really require that experience. You know, for instance, given my background in banking and finance and investments, that sort of thing, I jumped at the opportunity to teach economics to our seniors this year, and it's been a good experience, at least for me. I hope for most of them. But it's exactly what you're talking about, combining that real-world experience with what's taught to our young men and women in the classroom, and
or
can they use it?
Police science.
Right.
You know, one guy can teach you out of the book, the other guy's been a cop. I would think the experience is radically different.
Oh, most certainly, yeah. But there's still, you can be successful where a teacher teaches that class, but then brings in those elements, those you know, forensics experts or what have you, those investigators that can reinforce what they're teaching and then give it that real-world experience too.
So it's kind of a hodgepodge flowing all the time. Do you guys put any pressures on to say, hey, a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that? Do you worry about and monitor the SAT and the ACT tests and the placement tests to see, are they teaching to it?
Mm-hmm. We certainly have done some monitoring in terms of the test scores, because that's, you know, an across-the-board way to look at things. But then having a close interaction with teachers in the classrooms to say, okay, let's look at these strategies. Are they working? Let's look at this content. Is it getting across? How can we make that better? That requires, you know, a small school setting where you can have those opportunities to push into the classroom and see what's going on and support the teachers in that way.
And they all really appreciate you coming into the classroom and spending a class there?
Oh, absolutely.
Monitoring?
Teachers and students. They feel that, you know, on the teacher side, that, you know, I've got somebody here that's going to understand the dynamic in my classroom, and then also students that can feel, you know what, if I've got an issue, I've got somebody I can go to. It just doesn't end right there.
Homeroom study?
Homeroom?
Yeah, no homerooms. Okay. I wonder how many schools still have homerooms. I mean, that was fading when I was going through.
Okay.
So I wonder, you know, it's probably a 50s or a 60s thing that is just kind of.
I know for us, we start with morning prayer. So that's kind of our homeroom, if you will. But it's a chance for all of us to gather, you know, before class starts.
Same concept, same concept, yeah. Except you don't use the rulers.
No rulers. It's all on your phone these days anyway, so you can't.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Thanks for coming by, Dave.
Thanks for having me.
We've been Talking Shop with Dave Sharp. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug somebody's love. See you tomorrow.